Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
We're here.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Corner Podcast. Kel Dansby here with the old man Andreas Hale. Man, we witnessed a beating earlier in the week. And no, it's not boxing. No, it's not MMA. You know we're talking about the Locks beating down Dipset. Harlem can't even show their face right now. I may not see my cousins from Harlem for a couple of years. You can't even call Harlem Uptown no more. They're from Manhattan. So it was just a drubbing on the latest verses. We'll talk all about that. We'll touch on Bellator, AJ McKee being a legit superstar for them. Of course, we'll preview UFC 265 that is happening this weekend in Houston, as well as taking a lap around boxing. Not too much going on there. This is the last quiet week in boxing, so it's cool. Get into it. We'll talk a little bit about the Olympics and the U.S. squad going into the home stretch, seeing who gets what medals. We'll talk about that to round out the show. But Dre, every time we think, you know what, Versus might be a wrap. Versus might, you know what? They might have reached the pinnacle of Versus. They surprised me. And this was a pleasant surprise. It being on a Tuesday is so smart because, again, you need it when people are at home. Having Saturday's Versus in a non-corona world makes no goddamn sense. Nobody's going to be there to watch it. So it's on Tuesday. Everyone's tuned in. It seemed like everyone was watching this, and Jadakiss put on a show. Where were you at watching this? I'm assuming at the crib.
Yeah, I was at the crib. I was drinking, I was cleaning, and I was watching Jadakiss put the motherfuckers through the rinse cycle. God damn. That was next level disrespectful. Look, everybody knows it. Jadakiss is the Versus MVP. The dude smoked fabulous, and then he went out there and just held it down for the Locks. Even though Sheik was out there trying to fight everybody, it seemed like he just brought the energy from the jump. But but Jada, man. Look, we said on the preview show that the Locks were going to win this. The bag is too deep. And it was. It was clearly too deep. It was so deep that Joel Santana wasn't even sure of what they had in the bag because they were like, you ain't got no joints for the ladies. And then he went out there and got absolutely demolished. Also, somebody posted that on Twitter. Why did Joel Santana look like a pile of dirty laundry?
What was he wore, I don't want to get the name right. The fashion designer guy. I'm not into fashion.
Virgil.
It's Virgil. Virgil. I started looking up Virgil's clothing.
It's crazy. That's him and Kanye, they're boys.
He's a gentrified Dapper Dan. It's like they looked at Dapper Dan and were like, oh, no, we get some guy to do this shit. And he's not nearly as good. He just threw a bunch of shit on a hat. And gave it do-rag ears. It was ridiculous. Juelz had, by the end, you notice Juelz was just in his black tee, black bandana. That's what he should have started with. But at this point, it was a wrap. Jada took the bandana off, threw it on the ground. Everyone caught it. The Locks came out originally first off. The fuck you?
Yeah, it was over from that point. I mean, to be honest, it was over after the intros, the Locks came out like this was, you know, a super fight, right? The three of them looking fantastic in their 40s. Like, them damn smoothies and juices, smoothies must be doing them good. They look
juices
phenomenal.
For life, baby. Yeah, juices for life.
The three gentlemen get on the stage. You know, Jada's got the Tim boots on and, you know, the shorts and the really dope Locks fitted. I'm like, yo. Then it was like, and the Dipset. And then it takes them like forever to come out. And I was like, oh, this isn't good. Then they come out with like a ton of people. Then they have like a lawn chair. I'm like, what is going on?
Well, Cam did come out for another 10 minutes.
Yeah.
They lost Cam. And oh, we can't skip over Mike Buffer doing the intros.
Yeah, that was pretty dope. I know he was a little frightened for a moment there because, you know, once she gets on stage and starts flexing on everybody, Mike Buffer was like, I'm used to fighting between the bells, not before the bell.
Yeah, Buffer was like, yo, the check clear? All right, get me out of here. Y'all can figure this out. Yeah, it was a madhouse. I mean, you look just that. If anyone's been to the MSG and they've been to that smaller arena, it's a dope place to watch fights. It was a good venue for the fight and the fights that happened before the verses, if anyone tuned into those like I did. So it was cool to watch there. And then them breaking down the ring and having that platform was perfect, except that everyone rushed the stage. Like, if you could have kept people in their seats, it would have been fine. At one point, there was two guys who were like 6'3", 280, and shirtless on stage. Just flexing.
Yeah, I know what that was about. You know, it was crazy because, like, I was looking at this show, and, you know, it felt very, like, late 90s, early 2000s, right? And then I was looking, and I was like, with all these motherfuckers on stage, this feels very late 90s, early 2000s. Then my man had the jail swell on with his shirt off. I was like, yeah, I don't know what decade it is anymore. This is crazy. Like, this is crazy looking at this, the way this was all set up. It felt like a, you know, like the Hard Knock Life tour, some shit like that. But yeah, this was a drubbing. Bro, this was this the worst versus beating?
No. I mean, Teddy Riley still took a pretty big ass whooping, a baby face.
Yeah, but see, he took a technical ass whooping, right? Like, he got a cut. You know, he took a cut, was bleeding. He couldn't continue the action. Yeah. Dipset went the distance and got beat up. Like, the only person I know that got dragged too was Nelly with Ludacris. Like, Nelly got dragged.
Yeah, he got exposed. It got thin quick.
But I'm saying, in terms of like their performance, you knew it was bad when Cam freestyled and they booed him.
Booed him. Oh my God. If this was a boxing match, it'd be when Maidana fought Adrian Broner, where it started off really bad for Broner, and then it got worse, and then it got worse, and then it got embarrassing.
Man.
And they weren't knocked out. He wasn't knocked out. But the ass whooping stood the same.
Yeah, this was tough. And it was funny also seeing, I saw some people on Twitter talking about, oh, y'all acting like the Lock's dope now, and, you know, this... You know, people just saying wild stuff. Like, look, dog, let's have our moment. Because I saw some people was like, Jada is overrated. And it's a weird thing to say. But I'll say this about Jada. Jada's had albums that were cool. But Jada's like a collection of the body of his work more so than his albums, in my opinion. Like, what's Jada's best album?
Debut album.
All right.
Kiss the Game Goodbye.
Probably, right? You know, you could pick one because he's never had a bad album, but he's not, to me, he hasn't had a classic album. But if you take his best joints from his albums, it's like a phenomenal body of work.
Yeah. I mean, and the features, the remixes. I mean, when they came out, they pulled out Banned from TV, the third song.
Yeah, they weren't playing.
No, like Reservoir Dogs, Jay didn't even do his verse. Styles went a cappella. Like, they did 24 Hours to Live during the women's medley. Like, he broke out, like, what? The Mariah joint? He's like, we got Grammys. They don't know none about this. They were on Mariah album, legit Grammys. And not like, oh, we're doing an album cut just so we can have something to play in urban clubs, or they were on lead singles. They were Jenny from the Block with J-Lo. What? The features alone are bonkers. Kiss didn't even, one, he waved off like Tom Brady calling an audible. He waved off the DJ when he threw on Made You Look Remix. He was like, nah, that's just me. Don't play that. That's Nas' shit. What? That's one of the toughest Jada verses ever. Waved it off. Like, nah, we don't even need that today. He didn't play Kanye's Don't Like, which his verse is crazy.
I mean, yeah, he didn't do Why. He could have even done Why for the hell of it.
Oh, they could have, for his track.
Like I said, they could have done If You Think I'm Jiggy, and people would have been like, all right, bet. Because there was two things about the Diplomats that it just didn't work. The Locks were prepared to perform. And as soon as they started talking about we don't rap over our, you know, our vocals, it was over. It was over because Kiss was all over this without backing vocals. Like, he just went out there like this was a true hip hop performance. The performance energy was through the roof. There was nothing you could do to stop the Locks on this night. And the Diplomats were terrible. It's like they didn't even try. It felt like one of those things where they got caught and they thought they could just get by on their songs and the fans knowing their music. But you have to perform. And Jada Kiss was here to perform. Not only perform, he was here to clown y'all. And that's what he did. That was a long flight home to Miami, Cam.
Yeah, that was ugly. That was ugly. It was, oh my God. Cam coming out. Playing a Welcome to New York City. I was like, ooh, tough. But Jada coming back? Oh. Really, like, yo, I really live here. I'm on the block. I'm outside. Like, yo, the clowning. I'm from Miami. I don't live in Colorado. I was like, oh, that's it. Like, what? That's it? And again, the most impressive thing, and I could say that about a million things, is that they all, with no backing track, they all know every lyric to every song.
Yeah,
to each person's part. You don't need a backing track. They all knew every single song, whether it was Sheek's verse, Styles' verse, Jada's verse, solo albums, whatever it is, they know each other's entire catalog.
Yeah, this was, you know, I saw some people also talk about, you know, they've never had beef. They may have had beef. We just didn't know it, right? Like, they perform like they've been used to each other performing. Like, they knew when to come in, they knew when to go out, they knew all their verses. They didn't take this as a game because Jada, probably more than anybody else, knows what social media will do to you if you fuck this up.
Yeah,
and they went out there and they put on a show. I felt so, like, at a certain point, it was one of those ass whoopings where you were just like, man, I wish they could stop the fight.
And listen, I was around for a vast majority of the recordings. I was, again, like, I was there, like, maybe, what, 96 through 2006 all the time. And, I mean, that's a 10-year window for the Locks. Like, after that, obviously, they have solo projects, blah, blah, blah. But they've dropped two group albums since, which I thought I'd never see in my lifetime. I don't think they have problems. Like, honest to God, I don't think they've ever had a beef. Like, they've had beef with the record labels. They had beef with Puff when they were at the radio station, one in their masters. I believe Jada said he was going to throw a refrigerator at him. I don't know how that works. That motherfucker's strong. But yeah, like, together? Nah, like, this is honestly, if there's hip-hop friendships, this is the super friend of hip-hop. Like, there's no beef at all. They are brothers through and through, and they are on the stage like that. Like, we know beef that happened in Dipset. I'm just happy they were on the stage. When Cam came out later and brought a chair just for himself, I was like, oh, shit. Cam's trying to grandstand. Like, it kind of felt like they were one-upping each other at points. Joel's had to get his shit in, whether it made sense or not.
It didn't.
Jimmy went on, like, a four-song run.
Yo, and Jada was like, what is this song?
Yo, it was just Cam kept him afloat early. Cam did what he could, played down and out like midway through. I was like, okay, we're waiting on that. Cam got joints, so Cam kept him afloat. I don't know why there's a million fucking people on stage, but 40 Cal, J.R. Ryder, all of them, Hell Rel, Ruga, they were all in the crowd. Can't get none of them on stage? That's where you fucked up, like right there. Because that's some of the best Dipset joints with all of them. So they fucked up there. Damn, Jada just had an answer to everything.
He did.
Jada was like prime Floyd Mayweather. It wasn't even offense. It was just defense and counterpunching.
Yeah, he clowning. Like I won't say that, like, there's some people that say is Jada one of the greatest New York rappers of all time. Well, that's a very deep list, right? There's a lot of really good New York rappers.
Correct.
Skill-wise,
Jada's incredible as well. But in terms of catalog, body of work, he's one of the greatest New York rappers of all time. And I think that's where there's beginning to be a differential. And that's where people are really looking at Jada like, damn, he's done a lot. Like his longevity, this is 25 years now. 96 was 25 years ago. They have 25 years of work. I love KRS-One. I love Rakim. I love Big Daddy Kane. Their windows weren't 25 years. Like you can leave off the entire Bad Boy era and be iconic still. You can play just Rough Rider shit and be iconic still. They got great shit after they left Rough Riders on the D-Block joint. The Mighty D-Block, that wasn't on Rough Riders, that was on the Chic album. Outside of Rough Riders, well after that. So no, it's the run, that longevity, in terms of catalogs, they have a top three New York catalog ever. You're going into the Jay-Z territory, the Nas territory, and then you're starting to look for Jada's name in terms of catalog.
It's tough. I have to really think about it with Jada because, again, my problem always with Jada, it's not really a problem, it's just what it is. It doesn't have a classic album. And
this first one's pretty fucking good. Show discipline with Nas, knock yourself out. We gonna make it. None of y'all better.
Still not a classic. It's a really good album. It's not a classic.
Okay.
Like
there's like three or four misses that hurt it.
Nah, it's not a classic. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with it not being a classic.
It's just a good album.
Yeah. So it's like Jada has, he's got some of his other albums were they're all right. But again, it's a collection of the body of work, the longevity. I give him all that. But I think a lot of people, there were people that thought they were bigger fans of Cam than Jada, and they realize how much Jada has done. Because not only do you have Jada solo work, you have Jada with the Locks, Jada with D-Block, Jada with the Rough Riders, Jada with guest appearances. Jada's done all that. Now, the funny thing is now that we moved off because Dipset got washed, they need to figure it out. But I saw somebody say, are the Locks the greatest trio of all time?
Fuck. Let me go through trio there. Listen, I'm putting them above Beastie Boys, above Run DMC. Who are our other trios?
De La Soul.
They're above De La Soul. No, I like De La Soul a lot.
They are not
above. Again, the collection of work. They are
don't above care. De La Soul. The Locks do not have a 3 feet high horizon. The Locks do not have a stakes as high. Nope.
Wait, De La Soul doesn't have a fucking. If we're going hits, De La Soul does.
I'm not talking about hits. I'm talking about classic work. I'm talking about classic.
Those are classic hits. They don't got a Benjamin.
But that's a song. I'm saying De La Soul changed the game.
It's fair.
But in fairness, I'm just saying like. The Locks are absolutely up there, but this is what happens with the verses because then everybody starts going off and be like, "Yo, greatest of all time, this, that, and third." De La Soul is still a better trio. If you want to, I don't know if people count Tribe. I don't because only Fife and Tip rap.
Yeah. Do you count DJs?
See, that's the hard part because Maceo raps sometimes with them as well. So yeah. It's like it's hard to because if you count Tribe, then they're the greatest trio of all time. Forget about it.
That's fair. That's like that. There's no debating. Like no catalog is even going to help the Locks there.
No, nothing you can do there. But I'm just in terms of body of work, the Locks are phenomenal. And I just
and we're just talking as a group, right? Like their group work.
We're not talking nothing solo.
Yeah. Like their actual group work. Yeah, De La Soul and them are damn. That's very close. Like I can't even argue that De La is not better in terms of group work. I don't know. Fuck, that's close. I don't know. It's close. What do we get? Ghetto Boys?
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up. Ghetto Boys.
I'm trying to go through trios. Ghetto Boys. Damn, that body of work is really fucking. And I got a New York bias, like honest to God. And I still look at the Ghetto Boys like, fuck, that's good.
Yeah.
Right? Like in terms of group shit, but I'm not counted any face solo joints or features. So that's tough. I think Lox might eat them out. I don't know. I don't know any trios outside of that.
It's just the point is that I'm making is I think people forgot how dope the Lox are. Because when this battle was first announced, people were like, oh, this is a 50-50 battle. It wasn't. And it wasn't even close. Mm-hmm. And now I know some people are going to say, well, you know, it's Dipset's song selection, which is true to a degree. But man, as the battle was going, I was just like, yo, this is a very deep bag. Like, Styles played Locked Up. Like, Styles, like, So High. They didn't even do My Life. Like, there's so many joints they left on the table. And the Dipset was just burnt out. They had nothing left. To me, and I say this because I've never been the biggest Dipset fan, I think the Dipset a little overrated.
Ooh. I'm not going there. I can't.
I will.
Because I still listen to Dipset once a month, at least. Like, Diplomatic Immunity 1 and 2. Just Cam solo, Joel solo, Joel's mixtapes, Human Crack, Back Like Hook Crack 1 and 2, fucking iconic mixtapes. Man, that's fucking tough. They're not overrated. They're perfectly rated.
I say they're overrated only because people said that them and the Lox were 50-50.
Jim Jones got good solo album. Like, if you look from the outside, you'd be like, yo, there's no weak link. Like, some people may be like, yo, Sheik's a weak link. But Jim Jones, if he is the Sheik of Dipset, then Jim Jones has ballin'. He has, like, he had albums. Jim Jones' Harlem album, great album. So, like, there's albums for Jimmy that are really good. Granted, a lot of that was during the Max B era. And Max blessed him with a ton. But still, it's like you look around on paper and you go, all right, well, Sheik's the weak link. I'd probably give Dipset a good chance. But no, then you forget a bunch of shit. Because Sheik got verses. Like, you can say his albums weren't that, but you go back to Shiny Suit, Lox. Sheik got memorable verses.
Oh, yeah. Sheik cooked early for the Lox.
His shit is Shiny Suit. Shiny Suit rap is what he does great. Like, he's a big dude and people might think like, oh, he should be like bully rap or like shooting people. Does that shit a little bit. But he's always trying to stunt, talk money, talk being in the club, talk women. That was his bag. So when they were heavy into the Bad Boy era, he really got his shit off. Speaking in Spanish on the Benjamins, blah, blah. Like, he was always about that slick shit. That was just how he did. That was his lane. So when they went Rough Riders, they went a little harder, D-Block a little harder. He lost a little bit of that. So he got, you know, he lost what he was really good at. But yeah, not early Sheik was crushing shit.
Yeah, so now that we're done talking about this particular Versus, people have asked, should there be another Versus? And if so, whom? And me, I'm going to start this off. I don't see another artist Versus. I think we need to do another producer Versus because it's been a while and it's time.
Yes. It has. This New York deal is once a month through the end of the year, right? So we're going straight New York deal or just in general versus?
I guess in general, because I don't know. What are they doing for the De La Hoya-Vitor Belfort fight?
I don't know. But if Cypress Hill's not involved with this, what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Right?
Is it going to be a reggaeton battle? Is that what we're going to do?
I mean, maybe, but he's Mexican.
I know.
That's something they would do from the outside.
Yes.
But it's Mexican Independence Day. Like, we don't give, like, and we're not doing mariachi battles. So, like, what are we doing here? Like, no, like, all Spanish music isn't created equal. But Cypress Hill, Be Real, like, that's a perfect spot to have them in a battle. Listen, I'm not the biggest Cypress Hill fan. I don't know if they got 20. But if you can go Cypress Hill versus I don't fucking know. Cypress Hill versus Bone Thugs?
Nah, Bone Thugs would probably watch Cypress Hill.
They would, but I mean, that's people on the West fucking love Bone Thugs.
Yes, they
do. Like those, like Bone Thugs went from Ohio to the West Coast in a blink. I was like, what the fuck? Like, I came out here and people were like, oh, Bone. They fucking love Bone.
I see. There's one battle that I would like to see. It won't happen. It shouldn't happen. I just like to see it because I'd be thoroughly entertained by it. And it's a West Coast battle between the Dog Pound and the West Side Connection.
Oh, I like that. Corrupts in bad ways. I've seen them on TV, but you can prop them up.
But obviously, Dog, it's unfair once you add Snoop to the Dog Pound. But you got 20 songs. Yes, Mac 10 and Dub C, they got joints, but they probably don't compare to Corrupt in that.
You got Cube.
But there you go. You have Cube.
So you need Snoop.
So it's like Snoop. It's like Cube and Snoop are like the
Jada and Cam,
right? Yeah. And this is the battle. I like if they announce it like right as of right now. I just had a meeting and I was like, I don't think I'm gonna go to LA for De La Hoya Belfort. If they were to announce West Side Connection versus the Dog Pound, I'd go to California for that shit.
We in there.
I go, and I probably ask for like a bulletproof window somewhere. Somebody gonna get shot, probably. Some overzealous former Crip is probably gonna shoot the place up. But I would love to see this. Like, but to me, I think Dog Pound win. And I love Ice Cube. But I just think you could play Doggy Style. And I don't think there's too many albums on the face of the planet
that are gonna be Doggy Style. Because you are such a big Cube fan. Like you are one of the biggest Cube fans. Like first three albums.
Oh, yes.
You are the biggest Cube fan. So I'm shocked that you say that. Because you were really putting up Snoop's first album versus the first three of Cube.
Well, it's not just Snoop's first album. It's Dre's The Chronic enters the fray.
Okay.
So it you have the Dog Pound. I mean, you could do the Dog Pound album as well. You could do Murder Was the Case. There's a lot you can do here. But I'm just saying, like, I've listened to Doggy Style. Like, once a month, I'll just listen to Doggy Style. And I'm like, yo, sonically, music, this is one of the, this could be the greatest debut album of all time if it wasn't for Illmatic. Right? And some people would say that Doggy Style is better than Illmatic. I've seen people say this shit before.
I've seen people say it. Like, I mean, there's an argument to be made.
Yeah, so when I listen to it and the Dog and Corrupted Daz are on a lot of those songs, like imagine you do a battle and they play Doggy Dog World. It's tough to beat that song. It's tough to beat a lot of the stuff they're doing. Again, I love Cube. But my only problem is I think what Cube would end up doing is start playing the newer shit and then he just lose me.
Oh, yeah.
Like he played Put Your Back Into It and I'd be like, nope, ding, that's enough.
I kind of like that, though. Like that's not a bad song.
I mean, you could play like Bow Down and all that shit, but you know, I'm very partial to early Cube and True to the Game and Steady Mobbing and dog, you just play No Vaseline, forget about it. But that's the battle I want to see. Now, when it comes to producers, I mentioned this just kind of tongue in cheek that I would like to see the Ninth Wonder versus the Alchemist. A lot of people are like, well, Alchemist would probably wash Ninth. I don't know if he'd wash him, but Alchemist's bag is super duper deep.
Yeah.
Like frighteningly deep.
That's tough, man. That'd be a tough one for Ninth to win.
Yeah, it's really difficult. Like Ninth's got joints. Don't get me wrong. I love Ninth, but yo, Al's got a body of work. And then it made me think, like, well, who the hell could go up against Alchemist?
I mean, you want to bring Primo back for another? Jada did too.
Nah, I don't want to bring Primo back for another because I think
Primo left a lot on the table, man.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that you have people like Just Blaze hanging around out there. You obviously have Havoc, because I love to see Havoc in a battle.
Oh, him and Havoc and Alk. Yeah, like those are like a perfect pairing to go against each other. But I'm not sure if Havoc has enough.
No, I mean, dude, Alchemist has a lot. Yeah. Me, I'm very partial.
Many, though, I guess.
I know. I'm also very partial to Madlib, but I feel like it doesn't play well unless it's the right crowd. Like Alchemist has had joins from today all the way back. Me, I'm very like anything Madlib does, I'm a fan of, but I don't know how that plays into a battle. And then I was just thinking, like, well, damn, who could really go up against Alchemist in that setting? It's not any setting. In that particular setting, who goes up against Alchemist and you're like, all right, This is a battle. Other than like Premier or the RZA, I mean, Just Blaze doesn't feel like a proper battle. It feels like they're too...
Different types of producers.
Yeah, yeah. But so, I don't know. Listeners, who do you guys think that could go up against Alchemist? Let us know, because I'm very curious. I saw somebody say like Derringer from Griselda. I was like, no. They just got here.
Too early. Yeah, like, nah, they're bugging on now. Unless you want to do a completely different type of regional producer. Because to me, Alk is a regional producer, right? But you don't need to go New York regional style producer versus Alk. Like, you can go Alk versus...
I mean, Alk's from L.A.
But the sound's not L.A.
I'm just saying, Madlib's from Cali, too.
The sound That's fair, LA. But the sound's not L.A. But you can go... What if you did Alk and then like Sleepy came and represented the Dungeon family?
Nah, it wouldn't matter. It's not the same. It's not the same. Like,
but I mean, you can like cross-pollinate groups is what I'm saying. Like genres and types of hip hop if you wanted to. You can Scorch?
No. And he has hits. I mean, it's just, it's hard. Like, I was just going through Alchemist's catalog. I was like, oh my God.
Scorch got hit. Like, I've got a lot of shit, though. Him and Primo is probably the best bet, but Primo already went. I hear a lot of people talking about future verses. They want to see 50 versus Game.
No thanks. The reason why I say no thanks is I just think it'd be too petty. It wouldn't even be fun.
I mean, anything 50's in is petty.
And, you know, and then, you know, Game just name dropping everybody. And I don't think I'd have fun watching that.
I think I would. I mean, the catalogs, Game has so much more than, I don't know, 20 and 20 is close. 50 would have to play a lot of mixtape shit in there too.
Oh, yes.
Play Ghetto Quran. Like, you got to play a lot of shit from before he was signed. Because all that stupid girl, I'll take it to the candy shop. No, that's going to get way the fuck out of here.
No, it depends. It depends on the audience you're doing that for. To be honest, because I don't know.
You crush him on some shit.
You know, but if 50 plays Get Rich or Die Trying, that's tough to beat.
Yeah, 50 got some joints. I mean, 50 feature-wise was crazy. The G-Unit album was bananas. That got some joints. Him and Banks, he bring Banks out for a couple of songs. But Game's catalog is wildly slept on.
It is. It is. Doctor's Advocate, the documentary.
Oh, my God. If he plays Ali Boumaye, it's a wrap.
Yeah, there's like a lot of things. Oh. Game is underrated as an MC. People just don't like him as a person, which I can understand.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah. Like, I'm not mad at that. But I like Game as an artist. So he has so much. The Chris Brown tracks, Game's features are crazy.
Yeah.
So that's a battle I'm not mad at. But if 50 Cent's in the battle, we all know who I want in the battle. Ooh. Jeffrey Atkins.
Oh God.
Ja Rule and 50 Cent on a stage, MSG like this. One, it's definitely getting shot up. Two, it'll be entertaining before that.
It will. It
will. But no, yeah, the bulletproof vest will be needed, not just as a prop for the G Unit.
Yeah.
Because shit's Cadillac Ta and fucking, I forgot the other dude's name, something Ferrari Black. Got nothing to lose anymore.
Nothing.
And 50 would definitely play every diss song. He might do the medley of diss songs like Jada did women's songs. In Ja's face. The I smell pussy. Is that you, Ja? What? In his face. Oh, it'd be all bad. So I want to see it, though. So if there's one that I want to see, still, that's my one. 50 versus Ja Rule.
So that's fair.
But I pray for everyone's health if we get it. Let's hit the break, though. Talked about the verses. Yeah, that was the haymakers of the week. That was the big brawl of, you know, stylistically, lyrically. That was amazing. We actually had a fight on there. So we got to talk about the fight a little bit later. It actually ended well. You talk shit about this fight. The fight, the main event at least, was very fun. And then we also have to talk about MMA when we come right back. So you guys don't go anywhere. Combat Sports is next.
Hey, everyone. everyone, it's Lindsay Rhodes, and I've got a new podcast, the NFL Road Show. Fun and kind of nerdy conversation about the NFL every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I've got some amazing guests that are joining me. I'll be breaking the huddle with the top stories, previewing games. We'll get you set for the weekend fantasy with our Fantasy Friday episodes, and we'll answer some of your questions as well. So subscribe to the NFL Roadshow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, everybody, we are back. Time to talk MMA. Before we get into UFC and previewing UFC 265, we got to talk about the Bellator card from last week because we previewed it. It was dope. We, you know, on paper, 50-50 fight between Pitbull and McKee. We both thought the upstart, AJ McKee, would pull it out. I don't think either of us saw it going down like this.
Oh, boy. This,
It's Conor McGregor, right? Conor Aldo?
No. It's John Jones Shogun.
Ooh, yeah.
It's John Jones Shogun. It was the young upstart facing a guy whose legacy was intact. He wasn't, like, undefeated. Pitbull wasn't undefeated. Neither was Shogun. Shogun had just beat Machida, who was, to a lot of people, unbeatable at the time. The Machida era came and went real quick. Machida went and knocked out Rashad Evans. Him and Shogun had that very close fight. And then Shogun just wiped him. So everybody thought Shogun is the man, but here comes this kid, John Jones. And when that fight was booked because Rashad Evans was hurt and John stepped in to face Shogun, people thought it was a 50-50 fight. People also thought maybe John is biting off more than he can chew too soon. And what did John do? Mowed him down. Shogun didn't have a shot in hell. He beat him up third round knockout. Same thing happened with this fight with McKee. We all saw, we looked at McKee and was like, this kid's going to be great. Granted, McKee's 26. John, I think, was 21 when he fought Shogun.
Yeah.
But we all thought it. Like, we looked at what AJ had done through this tournament, which was utter domination. But Pitbull was already classified as the best pound-for-pound featherweight on the planet, two-division champion, beat the shit out of Michael Chandler and sent his ass to the UFC to fight in a title fight. And we all thought, man, this might be too tough. Took McKee 2 minutes to prove everybody that he's the man.
Celebrated.
My man knocked him out twice. He finished him twice in 2 minutes.
One by knockout, one by submission.
That's incredible.
Standing guillotine, which is also John Jones-esque.
Yeah, that's what he did to Machida.
Yeah, we did. Like, it's not easy to do. By the way, people watching that be like, oh, well, it's just a submission. No, that's probably one of the toughest submissions to pull off in MMA. And he just makes everything look so easy. Plus the showmanship with coming out. He had three walkout songs. Yeah, money. He has what it takes to be a star. Now, does he have to leave Bellator to do so? I don't know. But when you're looking at, and we talk about, okay, you got to be a villain to be pushed as a black athlete or to reach these higher levels, or they try to make it so. This guy doesn't have to be a villain. None of those antics were villainesque. It was just, you have to have personality. You got to be flashy. You know, you got to have some bounce in your step. And that's what he has. He has everything to say, man, I want to watch this guy. Whether it's in the cage, out of the cage, he has that intrigue that can cross over.
Yeah, the look, the tools, he's got it all. He's got it all. Now, the first question, does he have to leave Bellator? People might disagree with me. I don't think he does. And the reason why I say I don't think he does is because the UFC featherweight division is kind of in flux, meaning Volkanovski is a champion. He's fighting Ortega, where a lot of people think that Max Holloway should still be the champion, but he lost to Volkanovski. Now, let's just say Brian Ortega beats Volkanovski. That division is now a mess in terms of who's the best, who's really the best. Because we all remember Max beat the brakes off of Ortega. And I don't put it outside the realm of possibility for Ortega to beat Volkanovski. Meanwhile, you look at somebody like McKee, and if he were to leave Bellator, he's probably taking a pay cut, for one. Like, to be completely honest, to go to the UFC, he may not be getting paid as much.
I mean, that million sits real cool in the bank account. Hey. But in the long run, he probably gets paid.
I don't know. Because the UFC is criminally underpaying their fighters. And in order for McKee to get there, yes, they have to pay a pretty penny. But I kind of feel like this is like the WCW WWE thing where I think McKee is better off staying in Bellator for the time being. I don't think there's any rush to go to the UFC. I wouldn't run to the UFC to validate me. I think it's unnecessary when he can argue that right now he's the best featherweight on the planet.
Yeah.
And there are people that say, no, it's Max Holloway. And no, it's Ortega. And no, it's Volkanovski. But I remember plenty of people saying that Pitbull was the best featherweight on the planet. And when there was no lucky punch. This was an ass whooping. Head kick combination, stood him back up, guillotined him. He set him up, beat him down. Now, McKee's probably going to go after another title at lightweight, which Pitbull owns, to get a rematch. He could become a two-division champion. I don't see any rush for him to go to the UFC right now. Let the chips fall where they may. If you handle all this business in Bellator and there's somebody in the UFC where you're like, there's a super fight. There's something big for me to do, but make sense out of it. Because I kind of just don't want to give Dana that opportunity to take somebody like McKee. I wish they would cross promote. I wish there was, Coker would be like, hey, bring your guy. We'll take a neutral site. We'll do a joint pay-per-view for one fight. Yeah. See who's the baddest motherfucker on the planet. Because Bellator needs to grow. And you can't have UFC just taking fighters and continuing to underpay them. So I don't think he's got to leave. I personally right now think he's the best featherweight on the planet. Right now. Right this second. It could all change. Volkanovski could beat the hell out of Ortega and I might change my mind. But right at this very second, I'm saying AJ McKee is the best featherweight on the planet.
I think it's between him and Max Holloway. And I understand Max has lost, right? I didn't think he lost to Volkanovski the second time. So I'm just going off what my heart and my eyes say. I think Max Holloway is the best featherweight on the planet. And I think McKee is making his way towards that. Pitbull's incredible. I mean, he beat a guy challenging for the UFC title, right? Like, so, I mean, Chandler is great. He came over. We saw it, what Pitbull did to him. It's just, that's a top five guy, bigger weight, lightweight. It feels like Pitbull, like we know how great he is. But even then, fight in, fight out, we don't know how great he was. Which is shitty now because you get wrecked in 2 minutes, people's whole thought process changes. You go from one of the best in the world to, I don't know what he was. So McKee's win is amazing. Dominating a guy like Pitbull is incredible. But Max Holloway's been through the gauntlet. Win or lose.
Yes.
Max, at that weight, at featherweight, Max gone up and got washed. He came back down, lost close after coming back down, and then rematch, and I thought won his title back, but wasn't given the title. It's completely wrecked everyone else. That level of output, the coming forward, the pressure, it's a different beast, and I don't know how McKee would handle that. It'd make for an amazing, amazing fight. But to me, Volkanovski, McKee, like, don't go to the UFC. Not saying that he is or could just jump. Like, I don't know his contract situation. But I wouldn't go for a Volkanovski fight. Like, that's not a super fight, like you mentioned. That's not putting butts in the seats. Max Holloway's champion? Or if there's a Max Holloway fight? Yeah. Because you get McKee versus Blessed. That's star-studded headlining a pay-per-view. You getting points. You making over that mill.
The one counter I will say to what you said is I think we do know how good Pitbull was. And he was really fucking good. I mean, Pitbull beat, yes, Michael Chandler. But Juan Archuleta, who was a three-division world champion. Emmanuel Sanchez, like, Pedro Carvalho, who was undefeated, I believe he was undefeated at the time. I don't like that too often we make the UFC the barometer just because they have fighters, right? It's the featherweight division is very good in the UFC. And Jose Aldo for a long time ran that division because he came from WBC, came to the UFC and ran roughshod over pretty much everybody. Then he ran into Conor McGregor. Since that, Max Holloway came, dominated the division. And then, he lost. He lost the lightweight to Dustin Poirier. Now the division's kind of moving around. But other than those three, right? Ortega, Volkanovski, Holloway. Who's your fourth best featherweight right now?
Doesn't Khabib have a disciple that's just running over people at featherweight?
Yeah. And yeah. he could
That's my fourth best. Yes. Yeah, he fights for the title tomorrow. He's winning.
Yeah, which, you know, it's going to happen at some point. But
by the way, coach of the year, Khabib so far? Is he really going to win this shit?
I mean, yeah, man. The man said, you know, I'm going to retire undefeated, and then I'm just going to coach everybody to an undefeated record. It's kind of ridiculous. It's
wild.
It is. It really is. It is. I don't know, man. Like, I don't like – the UFC is great, and they supposedly have the greatest fighters on the planet, but I can't always say that for every division, because what are we basing it off of? Like, is the UFC heavyweight division? Yes. Right now, Francis Ngannou, best, they have the best heavyweight on the planet. Best middleweight, Israel Adesanya? Yeah.
Yep.
Do they have the best light heavyweight, though?
I can't say that. I mean, yeah, but that's by default. Because I don't like Bader.
But Nemkov is Bader out.
Yeah, he's good. But I don't know. I mean, I wasn't high on Ryan Bader. So, so then if you go to UFC, I don't know. That's
and,
tough.
And the you were talking about
Makhachev. Isn't old man Glover challenging for the belt?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Like, I don't know.
We were talking about Makhachev, and Makhachev fights a lightweight.
Lightweight, yeah, that's yeah. Right. I'm thinking of another one, though. I swear to God, I just saw a disciple fight like 2 weeks ago who is a featherweight. I am going to find it, though.
But ultimately, and that's why I say McKee's the best featherweight on the planet, because when I look at him, it's not just what he does to fighters and him just wiping out this entire tournament with no problems whatsoever. But then when you look at him stand in the cage with Pitbull and realize he's like 5'10 and he's got this incredible length, and then he submits and knocks people out, I don't know who beats him at all. I love Max. Don't get me wrong. I think Max is a phenomenal fighter and he could beat AJ McKee. But AJ McKee possesses those tools that could give Max hell. Because he can wrestle. He can strike. He's heavy-handed. Max, the one thing Max isn't is heavy-handed. Volume puncher.
Yep.
And he's a phenomenal volume puncher at that, who basically is death by a thousand cuts fighting Max Holloway, because he will just beat the brakes off you. You'll never really be hurt until like you realize in the third round, like, I can't see out of either of my eyes because they're closed and my face is swelling up. But he doesn't have like one punch knockout power. McKee gives Max hell. If Volkanovski goes out there and dusts Brian Ortega, then Volkanovski might be the best featherweight on the planet. But right now, I don't want to see anybody discrediting AJ McKee. Nobody. I don't want to hear he has to fight in the UFC, because that's not true right now.
No, it's not. I mean, we've seen that with guys like Michael Chandler, right? We've seen it with, just Eddie Alvarez coming over. Once you come over, you're still going to be where you are. You know, you're still roughly going to get top five guys. You haven't missed out on anything. You're probably, no matter when you come over, whether you're 26, 30, 33, you're probably two fights away from a title shot anyway. Justin Gaethje, another example.
Yeah.
So it's definitely no rush, like you said. Like, it's not like, oh, my God, he has to get over there right now. For what? Everyone's going to be there. You'll be fine. And you can kind of take your time. So I don't know. We'll see. And that's, you know, at this point, I'm wondering what's left in Bellator. Like, if he goes one more time against Pitbull and wins, what else is there? Oh, and by the way, I was wrong even on my second attempt. I was thinking about Usman Nurmagomedov, who is also a lightweight. And was on this card. I was like, yo, I know 2 weeks ago I saw somebody. No, it was this exact same card. Usman is the one I'm thinking of. I was like, yo, he can fight for the title tomorrow, and I'm picking him to win, except if he fights AJ McKee at lightweight. But if he fought Pitbull at lightweight, I give him a fair shot at the title. Now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's that damn good, too. So Khabib has two lightweights, two different companies.
So, like, AJ, here's his path right now. Probably defends his title at featherweight. I don't know against who. Maybe Mads Brunel. I don't know. And then you have Aaron Pico kind of sneaking around here again, starting to win fights. But you have AJ McKee as the champ, right? Now, if he goes to lightweight, does he fight immediately for the title? No, I'll give you the perfect fight for him. Patricky Pitbull. Beat the shit out of Patricio's brother, who was ranked number one in the lightweight division behind Patricio. Beat him up, then fight Patricio. Then you kind of
wait.
Then
they would do a tournament. It'd be like, you wait a whole nother year.
They don't have to. They can go straight from McKee to Patricky to Patricio. And in the interim, just keep an eye on Aaron Pico.
See, I like to run it back immediately. And then if Patricky wants to defend his brother's honor, then you whoop the brother too. But I like Pitbull's camp's idea of, yo, we just fought AJ McKee in his backyard of LA for a belt. All right, cool. Fair game. Let's do the next one in Brazil. Because again, it's our belt. Give us home field for it. I think that's a genius idea.
I'm not mad at it. I mean,
You put Patricky on the undercard as the co-main. Have him fight somebody. Keep him active.
I'm not mad at it. I just would like. I've never been a huge, huge fan because McKee just won the title. He has not defended that title. And for him to jump to another division and fight for a title immediately again, yes, it is the same guy, Patricio. It's always been kind of weird. I always like to see a guy at least fight a fight in the division because it's kind of unfair to just jump over everybody. And it kind of shortens like the lifespan of what you can do because if you already beat the champ, well, now what? What do you do after that? Now you have both belts. You beat the top guy twice. Then you start saying maybe he goes to UFC.
Yeah. I mean, again, he can fight his brother. But then after that, then it's like what? Aaron Pico or the UFC? And then it's that point Aaron Pico has to make himself into a star. Because sooner or later, you have to put this guy on pay-per-view, right?
You would think.
You kind of got to start making money off him and establishing him as that type of star. Not everything has to be on pay-per-view, but if anyone's going to sell, he is going to sell. But one thing you touched on is perfect segue into our talks about the UFC is when someone moves a division, you like to see them take a fight in that division first. Well, Dre, you and Dana White agree on something. Lo and behold, I know I am shocked. You guys both seem to believe in that, except when it comes to Conor McGregor, in Dana White's case. So Dana White said this week he would like for John Jones to fight a fight at heavyweight before going into the title picture against Stipe Miocic, and Stipe is on board. Do you think John Jones should take that offer?
Yes. Here's why. I would have said no before, but you already know what the UFC is doing to you. You need to fight. This is the only reason why I say this. Otherwise, John Jones is the case where I say he should fight for a title immediately because John Jones is the best fighter in the world. So I have no problem with him fighting for the heavyweight title immediately. Best fighter in the world. He's not the best in the division. Because he's dominated the division forever, best fighter in the world. But if you're not going to get the fight with Ngannou, because Dan doesn't want to cough up the money.
Yep.
And now you have this bullshit interim title fight, which is basically the number one contender fight, which basically says if the winner of this weekend's fight, which we'll talk about shortly, between Derek Lewis and Cyril Gane, if the winner gets that fight and you still can't come to terms with Francis Ngannou, they'll just elevate that interim champion to full champion. Right? And John will still be left out of that picture. So John's got a fight. He's been on the sidelines for a while. And Stipe's got a fight. He's still the number one contender. So I'm perfectly fine with this. Because you know what Dana's going to do. That's it. Dana's just not going to acquiesce and give you a title fight. He's already proven it. He does not care about you.
And he's not going to acquiesce and just pay you whatever you say you're worth.
Not at all. So you might as well go for it. Fight Miocic and force his hand. If you care about greatness, if you care about staying busy, if you care about money, you need to unionize because Dana's never going to pay you.
Yeah, that's a long way down the road. Yeah. So I don't know. That's dicey for John. But again, John, if you're the champion and you feel like you're the best heavyweight in the world, I always thought Stipe was the best fight for him. Because Stipe has punching power for a heavyweight, but he's not Ngannou. He's not Derek Lewis. he has to really catch you with something sneaky or put a barrage on you. Like, he's not just going to show you what's coming and still mollywop you with it, right? So I think size-wise as well, John put on weight. Stipe is like 130, or excuse me, 230. He's not a giant on fight night. Like, I think it's the perfect guy for him to test himself out against. And now, that should have been an interim title fight. Like, if they could have swung it, and Derek Lewis and Ngannou should just move to, like, September. But they would have to pay John way too much. So I get that. But like you said, John got a fight. Sooner or later, you got to make money.
How long has it been since John Jones has fought?
I will look that up right now, but I'm going to venture 2 years. I think he's fought five times in the past 5 years.
And it's crazy because John Jones is only 34. But it feels like he's way older than that.
Yeah, because, I mean, there was not too long ago when we started this podcast, we were like, wow, John Jones is only 28. Can you imagine what he's going to accomplish in the next 5 years? And then you look 5 years from then, and it's like, okay.
I mean, it's kind of his fault, too. You know.
No, it's all his fault.
Cocaine, you know, it's your fault. But the last time he fought was a year ago, a little over a year ago, against Dominic Reyes. It just feels Dominic like Reyes. Forever.
Yep, February 8th, 2020. That's a year and a half ago. Like, not just a little over. That's 1 year and a half.
Yeah, year and a half.
18 months. Fight. That's a long fucking time.
He needs to fight. He just, you got to get out there and you got to fight. And the Stipe Miocic fight, I guess, I don't know how they negotiate this. Pay-per-view points, because whatever you got to do, just do it. Just do it. If you want to fight. Otherwise, don't do anything.
Yeah, John has fought five times the past 5 years. Gustafson in 2018, Anthony Smith in early 2019, Thiago Santos in 2019, Reyes in 2020. That is it. Four times. Oh, excuse me, and then Daniel Cormier in 2017. So that's the fifth. Fifth and five in 5 years. That's not great. Over to say Prue is a little bit outside of the five-year realm. That was April 2016 was Over to say Prue win, which he didn't look incredibly great in that fight. So, yep, five times in 5 years. And if we go back further to 7 years, he's fought seven times in 7 years.
The only thing that makes this all worse is the fact that John hasn't looked phenomenal in the last three fights.
Yep. So in the past 3 years, he hasn't looked great. I'd argue going back to that DC fight. So he's 34 since he was 29. He hasn't looked like a world beater.
He looked like a world beater against Gustin. He beat the shit out of him in that rematch.
Oh, he did in the rematch.
But the Anthony Smith, Thiago Santos, and Dominic Reyes fights were three fights where a lot of people thought he lost to Reyes. Santos shouldn't have been hung around as long as he did. And Anthony Smith, it felt like he could have put him away, but he didn't. And he almost lost a fight because of those illegal knees. He has to rebuild himself. Even though we keep saying he's the best MMA fighter on the planet, he hasn't been that way for the last 3 years. And that's, remember when I said it, I was like, Khabib is now the best fighter on the planet until he retired. Yep. Because he continued to mow down the opposition. John's just not fighting. Go out there and fight. You beat Stipe, shuts everybody up real quick.
That's tough, man. He should take it. Because, again, clock's ticking. I know DC did this till he was 40, 41. But everybody's not DC. He had a late start, too.
Yeah.
His clock started later. So if John's just thinking, oh, I got until I'm 40, 41, not everyone does, sir. Life comes at you fast. Ask Connor. You think that activity is just easy. Motherfucker's top of the world. He's like, oh, I'm just going to do boxing for this paycheck. Came back and was like, what the fuck is happening? This is not how I left it.
That's how it goes.
So it's, man, it's tough world. So we'll see what John is. The money says you wait for Ngannou. The smart move would not be to go into an Ngannou fight. 2 years, 2.5 years of no fights. You should probably take someone. Not that Stipe is a soft touch by any means, but you should probably take a fight to just get your legs wet again. Like, see what's going on.
To be clear, if they offer him the Ngannou fight, he takes it. I don't think he waits. I don't think he goes, oh, I should get a warm-up fight. I think John's like, should or get off the pot. So I think if the Ngannou fight, for some reason, were to present itself with the money attached that he wants and Ngannou wants, you do the fight. You lose. It is what it is. I don't think John, it's not in his head. I don't think he's thinking I risk it against Stipe. It's like, no, I'm good enough to fight him now.
Yeah, so I agree. So, but if that's the only fight on the table, you take that, you fight in December, which is damn near 2 years out because last time was February, and you get a paycheck and you force the UFC's hand going into next May.
Definitely.
When you're 35 years old. Talking about UFC 265 interim title fights. God, oh, you don't love these interim title fights?
Yo, this card sucks.
I've seen worse, but yeah.
Have you seen a worse pay-per-view?
Yeah, like 3 months ago, we had a pretty shitty one.
Which one?
Oh my God, it's so hard to go back on this stupid app. I will find it for you. Where I was like, yo, this isn't really the best pay-per-view. Go through this one and I'll find it. UFC 262, Oliveira Chandler in the main event. But Ferguson, Dariush in the co-main. For a pay-per-view, Dariush, hey. Ferguson in the co-main. Then you have Matthew Christopher Schnell versus Rogério in the third fight. Caitlin Chukagian versus Arroyo on the fourth fight of the pay-per-view. Edson Barbosa versus Shane Burgos in the opener of the pay-per-view. That pay-per-view card is light.
It's not as light as this. Dude, Derek Lewis and Cyril Gane are fighting in the main event for a fake title.
Oliveira and Chandler was a gift of a title fight too, by the way.
No, it wasn't.
Chandler was, yeah, because it was vacated by Habib.
Well, I mean, that's vacating. Like, there's nobody vacating a title here.
No.
Dana's just being a dick. This is
more criminal, yeah.
Yeah, like, Dana's just being a dick. That's all that is. I mean, the Oliveira Chandler fight was really, and then it turned out to be a really good fight.
No, that wasn't very good in a while. Fight.
This card is bad. Like, this card is bad. Love Angie Hill. We all love Angie.
Yeah.
She's fighting Tisha Torres.
It's going to be a good fight.
Come on. It'll be all right fight.
Chiesa versus Luke. Come on. That's a good fucking fight.
It's a good fight night fight card. Yes, it is. This is a very good UFC fight night.
Aldo Munoz.
Very good UFC fight night.
All right. I just said I didn't say it was good. I just said I saw worse. And I believe
I don't think it's worse. I don't think Chandler Oliveira is a better main event than Derek Lewis and Cyril Gane.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
You're right. You're right.
And even Tony Ferguson, it's still Tony Ferguson. Like, if Tony Ferguson were to beat Beneil Dariush, you'd been right back in the title picture.
That's my case for Jose Aldo. In this one.
You put Jose right back in the title picture?
No, but Jose is still Jose, is my case, where he still brings him out. Like, Jose Aldo is still Jose Aldo.
He's kind of here on name recognition, right?
Yeah. I mean, Tony is at this point, too.
No. But Tony Ferguson lost to Justin Gaethje, right? Jose Aldo is 1-3 in his last four fights.
Yeah, it's ugly.
Like, Jose Aldo is, he's here, kind of. Like, remember, he fought Petr Yan for the vacant bantamweight title, and I remember we were like, why is Jose Aldo in this fight? He lost two in a row.
Yeah, and then he looked good for a round.
For a round, and he got beat up.
Yeah, and then he got beat up. It's a bad card, man. They needed Amanda Nunes.
They really did. And they could have just made her the main event. Maybe she wouldn't have got COVID. That's a stretch, but I'm just saying.
I think she still would have been in the same gym, but yeah, sure. Should have been a main event. She should be the main event on any card she's on.
Yes. And then if you're going to have an interim title fight, right, for Derek Lewis and Cyril Gane for an interim heavyweight title fight, even though Francis Ngannou just fought like 4 months ago, why did you have an alternative for if something happened to the co-main, well, what should have been the main event? Why don't you have Holly Holm ready? Or somebody.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that could have been an interim title fight.
Exactly. Like, if let's just say Nunes got, it would make more sense than Cyril Gane and Derek Lewis. If you did Holly Holm versus Juliana Pena, okay, fine. Yeah. Dude, if
Duranta May versus Pena, it doesn't matter who.
If it was Misha Tate.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying, anybody, that would have been like, all right, fine, interim title fight, cool, shit happens. This interim title fight sucks. this card sucks. There was like 150 people at the press conference today. It was the lowest viewed press conference on live stream on YouTube that they've had in the past year, probably in the last like 3 or 4 years. It's pretty bad.
It's not trending very well. Dana's always like, this is trending to be our, yeah, this isn't trending very well.
No, sure. Man, nobody knows who Cyril Gane is. And we love Derek Lewis, but come on.
That's not all right. Let's give our predictions then. So going up the card, Song Yadong versus Casey Kenny in the opener. I always pick Song Yadong, so I'm never stopping that. Always.
Sure.
Taking Song Yadong?
Yeah. Yes, I'm taking Song Yadong.
All right. We're on Team Yadong.
And you know, and it kind of sucks because he fought Kyler Phillips and he lost that decision. And Casey Kenny's really good. But
yeah, it's not gonna be easy.
No. And Casey Kenny's like a little tank when he fights, but I'm picking Song Yadong.
Yeah, I never pick against Yadong. And then women's strawweight, Tisha Torres versus Angie Hill. I root for
everyone.
It's
a tough fight for Angie. Yes, I'm rooting for Angie as well. But this is a very tough fight because Angie, what does she have problems with? Wrestlers.
Wrestlers, yep.
And Tisha Torres is a wrestler. She's not much of a striker, and she'd be a fool to think that her striking has improved that much that she can stand toe-to-toe with Angie Hill. But I'm going to say that Tisha Torres thinks her striking is that good and goes toe-to-toe with Angie Hill and loses a decision.
Good. I'll take Angie by decision. But, yes, Tisha Torres only has to take Angie down twice, and she'll be in pretty good shape. She takes her down twice, she wins. This is what the game is. So she knows what the game plan has to be. Next, Michael Chiesa versus Vicente Luque. What do you have?
God, it's a hell of a fight. Man, there was a time that Luque looked like he was going to be the next big thing.
Yep.
And he lost to Wonder Boy. Now he's won a few in a row. And he beat Tyron Woodley, beat the piss out of him in their fight. But who doesn't these days, right? So I really like Chiesa. I really like Chiesa.
Chiesa hasn't lost in some time, too.
No, he hasn't lost to Pettis. He hasn't lost to Pettis, and like he was struggling to make weight in that fight. And since he's moved up to welterweight, he's undefeated.
Wonder Boy is the only one for Vicente.
This is the best fight on the card.
Yeah.
I'm going to pick Vicente Luque, but this is a really tough fight. I'm picking Luque, but damn, Chiesa's looked good at welterweight.
For the sake of argument, I'm taking Michael Chiesa.
That's fair.
We're splitting hairs, but I had brunch with the man once, so might as well.
Well, like, all right.
Yeah, like if it's that close, you go with a brunch, bro. So Michael Chiesa it is. And then next up, Jose Aldo, Pedro Munhoz. Aldo's not winning again until he goes to Bellator, and I don't think he'll win there. So give me Munhoz, but by decision, it's only a 3-rounder.
Yes. Jose Aldo wins if this fight's under 7.5 minutes. If it goes past that, Pedro Munhoz wins. Probably by decision, might be my knockout. I think Munhoz weathers the storm. He's a competent enough striker. Aldo's not as explosive as he used to be, even though he's still a great body puncher. But I think Munhoz will be just competent enough to avoid any major punishment and watch as Aldo gasses out. Either finishes him in the third or wins a unanimous decision.
Okay, I agree with that. Pretty solid analysis there. Right on the button. Main event, Derek Lewis, Black Beast. Cyril Gane, who do you have?
Oh, man, Cyril Gane. Look, people love the Black Beast. But there's a couple things here that are very clear. One, the Black Beast has never gone 25 minutes in a fight. Never. Never. He's gone a decision, 15-minute decision. And quite a few fights, he comes from behind to win. Cyril Gane has never lost a combat sports fight as a pro, Muay Thai or MMA. Cyril Gane was just in there with Jiro Rosenstruck and Alexander Volkov. Won both fights against two really dangerous strikers.
Yeah.
Really dangerous. And Gane looked phenomenal against Volkov. So this is how this fight goes. As long as Gane isn't an idiot and fights in close quarters early, he uses that really sharp jab, pisses Derek Lewis off. Derek tries to throw those big haymakers. And by the late second round, Gane starts cranking up the pressure, beats him up, finishes him in like the fourth. Because Derek Lewis is going to be tired. He's going to be tired.
Yeah. I mean, I could completely see that coming to fruition. I'm picking the Black Beast.
Well, he's got a one hitter quitter, but
second round knockout.
He's gonna have to catch him.
He's gonna Gaines be tired, but he's gonna throw it and he's gonna land something.
Gaines just got a really good jab. Like, he's a really good Muay Thai striker.
He's so technically sound. So yeah, if he wins, I understand. Like, I can't knock that. He's a smart fighter. This ain't a chess match, though.
Yeah, it is for Derek Lewis, there is no technique involved.
No. This is picking up the chessboard and just slamming it on someone's head and then saying, checkmate. that's what I expect. So, but no, I can picture it going exactly how you say for serial game, but I'll ride with the Black Beast on that one. By the way, we get a UFC card September 25th. I haven't told you yet. I'll be in the house. I'll be covering that.
What card?
UFC 266. I will be there for it. I'm assuming you will be there September 25th.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to London for the Joshua fight.
Oh, good. I mean, not good, but good.
Well, I mean, the reason I'm not going is COVID's kind of going crazy. International travel is kind of complicated. And I'm kind of like, and it's my daughter's birthday. So, yeah, I'll probably be here. I'm going to have to keep an eye on this. It seems like if Anthony Joshua beats Usyk, which we'll talk about boxing in a little bit here, I fully expect him to be in town for Wilder Fury 3. That'll be fun.
Ooh, I fully expect Fury to be in town for Joshua Usyk and then fly back the next day because he's doing the rest of his training camp out there.
Yeah, very true.
So we might have a face-off type of thing, which would be dope. So, I mean, it's can't wait to see how that plays out. But, yeah, we might be in there. There's no urban loitering, I'm assuming, for that card. But one thing we do have is the return of Shake Shack.
Oh, yeah. It's been a while.
We'd be at the Shack, and that card is at least better than this card. We get Blades versus Rosenstruck on that card. Cavill versus Andrade. Marlon Moraes is on that card. Nick Diaz, Robbie Lawler, 5-rounder, because I guess that's all Diaz's fight.
That's the Diaz deal.
Yeah, it's a 5-rounder. And then Shevchenko, Murphy, Volkanovski, Ortega.
It's a pretty good card.
Pretty damn good card to be in the house and eat some Shake Shack at.
Let's find out if it stays together because COVID, since Dana White has suggested that he's not going to tell any of his fighters to get vaccinated, let's see how long this fight stays together.
Yeah. So fingers crossed, but loosely. We might have some movement on that card is all that I'm saying. Let's hit our last break. You talked about boxing a little bit. We're going to wrap up the show. Just doing a quick lap around the boxing world. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. We'll get right back to the show in a second, but first, the wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be able to be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at Bet Online. Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads to totals to teams, player, and coaching props, Bet Online gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, divisions, and championship futures all day, every day.
Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
All right, Dre, it's boxing time. You're not overly enthusiastic. I get it. But this is our last down weekend in boxing. And this stuff starts to ramp up. Virgil Ortiz next weekend, which is going to be exciting, as always, because it's Virgil Ortiz and he has 100% knockout rate. And then we have Pacquiao the week after that versus Spence. Exciting. Week after that, some would say we have Benavidez. Others would say we have Jake Paul.
I'm going to be at Jake Paul. That's where I'll be.
Exciting. I'm in a wedding that weekend, so I won't be there. But if not, I would have been at that fight right alongside of you. So we have a lot of weeks coming up, and then we get kind of a reprieve, even though I think September 4th might be Boots Ennis. on Showtime. So great fight. And then the return of Oscar De La Hoya on the 11th, possibly Canelo on the 18th of September, Anthony Joshua, like you just mentioned before the break, on the 25th of September. Don't know what we have for the first week of October, but plenty of fights to go around. Maybe that's where we end up getting Shakur Stevenson. That fight seems to be announced soon, according to Shakur's social media. Maybe that's where we get him challenging for his title, for the title, should I say. Then, I mean, October 8th, we have Tyson Fury versus Deontay Wilder, like you mentioned. So we are slammed all the way through October. Oh, by the way, Tank on social media said he wants to fight in October, so we may get that one. There's a possibility that we end up with another pay-per-view that month, depending on what Showtime wants to do, because Fox is handling the Wilder one. Tons of fights going into the fall. I'm excited about them all. Which one are you looking forward to most?
Ooh, that's a good question. Spence Pacquiao. Yeah. Spence Pacquiao, because this might be the last time we see Manny Pacquiao. And if Errol Spence wins, he's now a made man. But if Pacquiao wins, we have to have a conversation about where he's at in the greats all the time. I think Errol's going to win. And as we get closer to the fight itself, we'll talk more about that particular fight and the X's and O's. But I think it's really intriguing because I like to see how Errol handles Pacquiao's speed, moving in and out. I like that fight. We've talked kind of about Joshua Usyk. I want to see the fight, but I think Joshua's just too big for Usyk. Wilder Fury could be another one-sided drubbing, or it could be a dynamic knockout. Who knows? Canelo, we just don't know who he's going to fight. So I can't really speak on that. Who am I missing?
No, that's pretty much it. Everything else is still to be announced and to be determined. But I mean, there's tons of stuff on the slate, you know, going past that have been rumored. I think September 10th, Oscar Valdez comes back. That means sooner or later, we'll also get Andy Ruiz coming back, maybe against a tougher opponent, which would be dope. I saw someone throw around Ruiz versus Joyce. It'd be an incredible fight.
Sure.
Especially if they're trying to get Joyce into America, that'd be great. Man, just tons and tons of action. Daniel Dubois just is announced that he's coming over, making his first fight in the U.S. on the Jake Paul card. So that should be good. Tommy Fury will be there, fighting Jake Paul's sparring partner to try to set up a fight between those two. So it's a lot of stuff up in the air, but I like it. It's, of course, a packed slate. The one I'm looking forward to most, and I mean this in all honesty, is Jake Paul Tyron Woodley.
Deadass.
Yeah, I know X's and O's wise what I'm getting with every other fight. I know that Joshua is bigger than Usyk. I know that Usyk, in my opinion, is more skilled. But does he have the pop to threaten Joshua? Because that's the only thing that ever messes up Anthony Joshua, is you got to hit him in the chin and scramble his brain a little bit. Nope. I mean, maybe Usyk surprised us. He's been putting on weight. Cool. I know the X's and O's there. I know Fury Wilder is the same narrative the first two fights. Knockout versus technician. We get it. I understand how that's going to go. Even Pacquiao versus Spence to a degree. Speed in and out. Are you going to be able to fight closely? Will Spence get into a firefight? Would he use his length? Because honestly, we haven't just seen Spence drubbing people lately. He tries to make sure he uses less length, stays safe, doesn't take too much damage, wins on the cards. So I know how that fight is going to go. I don't think anything in that fight is going to shock me. I don't think Manny's going to knock out Errol Spence. Like, I know what I'm getting going into that one. I have no clue what this Jake Paul Woodley fight's going to look like.
I mean, yeah, you're right. But it's going to be a circus. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Oh, yeah.
I wish it wasn't in Cleveland. I'm sorry, guys. I get your messages, man. You live in Cleveland. Don't disrespect my city. But
how is this not in Miami?
Yeah, I don't know. But it is kind of unpredictable. I still think Jake Paul's going to beat up Tyron Woodley.
Willie's training with Mayweather, and Mayweather's training.
I don't care.
Now, and
look, man, if I look,
he is at least a striker. Like, Ben Askren couldn't fight his way out of a paper bag. Like, me and you got a shot if we're just straight boxing against Ben Askren. Like, he couldn't throw a punch. That's not Tyron Woodley. So Woodley has power in his hands if he lands correctly, maybe not in these gloves. I don't know. How much can they teach him in 3 months? 3 months is a long fucking time for a guy who has fought before and developed from a wrestling style into a striker. So it's intriguing. I'm looking forward to it because Woodley could fuck up the bag.
He could. He could. It, you know, I keep saying that he doesn't have much of a chance. He always has a chance. But he could. I'm intrigued by the fight. Like, I want to see the fight. I'm just not as excited as you are. Because I want to see a really good fight. And I think Spence and Pacquiao is going to be a really good fight. This could be ugly. It could be one-sided. But it's very unpredictable. We don't know.
We don't. Who has a better shot at winning? And this is going to sound stupid, but it's a legit question. Wilder or Woodley?
It is a good question. People are going to be mad. Deontay Wilder.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting.
It's, again, it's just that that power has been unmatched with Deontay.
He has a better shot of knocking out the number one heavyweight in the world than Tyron Woodley has of defeating a YouTuber.
Yeah, well, a YouTuber that's actually boxed. If Tyron Woodley had three fights,
Woodley has 30.
Woodley has no boxing match, like zero, zilch.
He has fights.
Yeah, that's not the same. Soccer and baseball have a ball.
The athleticism difference is through the roof.
Look, like, and the other thing is, I would find some credence in this. Tyron Woodley had won a fight. He hasn't won a fucking fight.
He's been getting his ass whipped a lot lately.
So yeah, I'm gonna say Deontay has a better chance because it can happen at any given moment.
Yeah, man. That's tough. I was thinking that is tough right there. The other thing, well, one, I promised to talk about this. Michael Hunter got a knockout at the Versus.
Yes, he did.
That's what he needed. That's what Versus needed to establish. Like, if you're gonna pair this with boxing, you got to give the casual something. And he folded, old boy.
Yeah, that's what you're supposed to do as an opponent that you're supposed to fold, and you folded him up. Look, Michael Hunter is a top 10 heavyweight, but I say this all the time. On cards like this, you got to have a can to get knocked out. You have to have a squash match. You have to. I don't care about the competitive nature of it all because you know the audience is coming to watch a rap battle.
Yeah,
they don't care about competition.
That's where DAZN fucked up with Devin Haney when he fought Paul card.
Exactly. So go ahead, put somebody out there that's going to fight, but is going to get knocked out. And that's what they did. And yeah, Michael Hunter, big knockout. I'm curious what they do with him moving forward. I'd like to see him fight a Dillian White. I'd like to see him fight Andy Ruiz.
Be amazing. Yep.
He has options. You know, the option he doesn't have, you know, he wants a title fight. That's not happening. But yo, fight a Dillian White, fight an Andy Ruiz, fight even a Joe Joyce. There's options.
Yeah. Heavyweight's deep. Yes. For the first time in a long time, heavyweight is deep. So plenty of options there. Then that brings us to the last topic of the show, Olympic boxing, sir. The Olympics are almost, I mean, boxing-wise, we are almost towards the tail end. We're getting the gold medal and silver medal games in almost all divisions. The U.S. at this moment still guaranteed 4 medals. And I think that'd be the most tied with the most since 2000, which would tie them with 2000. 2000 had 2 silver medalists, 2 bronze medalists. At this point, we know Duke Reagan won the silver medal. Close, split decision loss in that one. Almost came away with the gold. So he has silver. Does the U.S. have a chance at winning gold?
Yeah, have a chance. It's the best chance they've had since Andre Ward, clearly. And that's crazy.
No, that's not right. That's not right.
What?
Shakur was the best chance they had.
Yeah. You're right.
That's and Shakur, you know, crying aside, Robesi Ramirez is pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
So Robesi, who beat him, is, you know, he earned that one. So cool. But yeah, like, I mean, I like this crop of Olympians. Of course, I mean, Keyshawn Davis is fucking phenomenal. And he's going to be an amazing pro.
He is.
Is he better than Shakur? I don't know. And for, you know, Shakur going against Rebessi, I thought that was pretty straightforward. That was a toss-em, pick-em fight. Maybe Shakur was even favored. So Rebessi beating him was like, okay, he got bested that day. That was surprising. Looking at this one, I don't feel the same going into what is presumed to be the gold medal fight. Keyshawn Davis has lost to the guy 3 times already.
Yeah, no. The guy
is widely regarded as the best Olympic boxer in the field. Any weight class that Keyshawn would have to knock off. So tall order.
Very tall. So it's a good chance. I mean, and obviously we're speaking men's boxing because Clarissa Shields was clearly the best Olympian as winning back-to-back gold medals. We're talking strictly men's boxing here. So, I mean, everything you just said, Keyshawn Davis, I think Keyshawn Davis will be excellent as a pro, but I don't see him winning the gold medal here. Not this style of fight. It's amateur style fighting, man. Point fighting, 5 judges. It's a completely different world for a lot of these guys, and it doesn't translate the same. So I wouldn't be surprised if I'm lying. I would be surprised. You lost to the guy 3 times. I don't know what you're going to do any different. So there's that.
Yeah. Each time he's lost a little less, but a loss nonetheless going into that. And yeah, I mean, we still have a super heavyweight in the field. I think he just fought earlier today to make it to the gold medal round. So, you know, he's going to get gold or silver. And then that's going to be a tall task. So there's still some chances at gold. And then the last question, who's your Mount Rushmore of boxing Olympians? I love that we saved this for the end too. It's like, yo, if people listened to the whole thing and got here with us and they're boxing fans, damn, this is a good reward. Who is your Mount Rushmore of boxing Olympians? Mind you, I did not say gold medalist.
I know.
Cool.
I'm trying to think of the best Olympians that I've watched. I'm going to let you go first. I need to think about this.
Clarissa Shields won. I mean, she won 2. Like, yes. That's incredible. This is where it gets crazy. Give me Floyd, even though he got robbed. Give me Pernell Whitaker, Sweet Pea, also won silver. Or no, I got to check. Sweet Pea might have won gold. I think Sweet Pea won gold. So Sweet Pea, Foreman. Boom, those are my 4. I love Big George. Olympia Big George. Motherfucker had cement hands.
So.
And he was like 19, right? Something stupid.
Yeah. I'm going to say Clarissa Shields. Muhammad Ali, Cassius Clay. Okay. Yeah. Brought home the medal, got treated like shit. Part of the precursor, him turning into the Muhammad Ali we know today. This is where it gets dicey, because do I include Vasily Lomachenko in this? He's the greatest amateur fighter of all time.
Yes, tough. Sweet Pea did win the gold, by the way, 1984.
Yes.
I went American heavy. Yeah, so that's fuck Loma. Loma got 2, right?
Yeah, I'm putting Loma on my list.
Floyd might get up off of my list, and Loma might gotta be there.
Well, see, I'm taking Whitaker off my list also. You wonder who I'm putting in his place?
Who?
Roy Jones. He got robbed.
Roy did get robbed.
Like, Royally. That was straight burglary. And I like, and yes, again, Clarissa Shields is American. Vasily Lomachenko is the greatest amateur I've ever seen. Guillermo Rigondeaux I almost had on this list.
Ooh. Okay.
And, you know, the fact of the matter is Cubans are phenomenal at this style.
Yep.
But those of you who know, I've collected Roy Jones's fights and I've watched the Olympics and I was like, how the hell did he lose? Floyd Mayweather shouldn't have lost either, but Roy Jones was robbed in the Olympics. Like, you watch those fight, like watch that fight. There's no way in hell Roy Jones should have lost in the Olympics at all. straight burglary.
Oof. Yeah, I remember that fight. Ah, that's tough. You know what? I watched that fight as I was growing up, because I think I watched that Olympics live. But later on in life, I was watching like Olympic fights. And to think De La Hoya won his gold medal fight and Roy didn't is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, I watched both of them that same day and I was like, what? No, you got to be fucking kidding me.
Now, the other thing is, when we talk about the Olympics, because it gets really tough, because yes, this is very American bias, because there are, you know, Zhu Xing, obviously, was before he turned pro, the guy was for China. He was like their Muhammad, their Floyd Mayweather. Mm-hmm. You know, like Felix Savone was great, but it's like, I got to go off of what I've actually seen. And I can't, like, it's like putting Bill Russell on a lot of lists, or Jerry West, because I didn't watch enough games. I can go off what I saw with Roy Jones, and that's all I can do. And I just think that he was the biggest robbery in the Olympics ever, to me, is Roy Jones. So I have to put him on my list.
And I pulled up this list. That's so true. A name that I completely forgot about, but this list is spot on. Roberto Bolaño.
Yes.
Was an animal. An animal as an amateur. Dominated the 1992 Olympics. Made it look easy. And tragically died in a car accident at 25.
Yep.
So that is a name. I mean, they have Vasily Lomachenko very high on this list as well. Clarissa Shields. They have Roy Jones at 5. Higher.
Jesus,
than,
you know what? You know who else I forgot? Oh my God. Sugar Ray Leonard.
All right. I'll take 4. I mean, Sugar Ray.
I won't. Like, as a kid, I remember just the house was talking about Sugar Ray Leonard turning pro after him winning the gold medal.
I was about to say, he was like the pretty boy, America's pretty boy, after winning those Olympics. So I get it.
Yeah.
That's so. Yeah.
And again, I put Muhammad Ali, Cassius Clay, man. That's
God.
That's,
I love Sweet Pea, though. I love that run by Sweet Pea in the Olympics.
It was great. It was great. But Cassius Clay has to be on my Cassius Clay. Clarissa Shields, Roy Jones Jr., Vasily Lomachenko.
All right.
That's my list.
Listen, I can't be mad at that. Let us know who you guys have on your list. Hit us up on social media. Of course, thank you for sticking out the whole show. We appreciate you. Make sure you follow us on social media at Corner Podcast _ on Twitter, at Corner Club for Life on Instagram, me at Kel Dansby, him at Andreas Hale. On all platforms. Shout out to Blue Wire, the network. Shout out to all of the sponsors. All of you guys, stay safe, stay Rona free. They tell you put a mask on again, put the damn mask on. Let's have fun. Let's do our thing. Health is first. We appreciate you all. Thank you for listening. Until later in the weekend, we're out.
Peace.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.